I don't know Bud.
But he's dressed for the occasion. My sponsor told me that every time I get behind the podium, I have to have a jacket and a tie on. So he's the speaker tonight with a jacket and a tie on. But everybody help me welcome Bud.
I'm a full-time alcoholic. My name is Buck Miller. Hi, family. I'm sober today by the grace of God through the program and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is May 18th, 1974. Let me see how many days that is. 17,562 days since my last drink. And I have not done it by myself. I can't say that, but that's what this book means to me. My dad was an alcoholic. My mother was an untreated Al-Anon. My dad never had recovery. However, when my mother divorced him in 1947, he decided to put the plug in the jug. He didn't have Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't have recovery. He was an angry, dry alcoholic. I was 9 years old. Yeah, I was 9 years old at the time. A year later, my mother took him back. I have not a lot of memories of my dad during that time. I didn't get to know him until I got sober, really, because we would drink together, and he would get obliterated, and I wouldn't remember. That's just the way it was. I had my first drink in the summer of 1948. My two half-brothers were down visiting from northern New England, and it was hot. We lived southeast of Boston, almost to the Cape Cod. And I'd been out playing in the yard. We lived in the country. And I was all hot and sweaty, and I came in. And my brothers, half-brothers, and their wife and girlfriend were sitting at the kitchen table drinking beer. And my oldest brother said to me, "Would you like some?" "Are you kidding me?" "Sure." First time, I didn't know. Jelly glass, like this is what they poured me out of a quart bottle. And I picked it up and I drank it all down. I didn't know about chug-lugging. It was hot, I was sweaty, and it went down. That magic moment gave me something that I chased every time I picked up a drink. My older half-brothers validated me. They said, "Kid, you can drink." And that's, you know, I felt all warm inside. I felt accepted. I felt validated. I didn't know what that word meant at the time, but I do now. I felt like I was somebody. So every time I picked up after that, every chance I got to drink, which wasn't much until later on, I was seeking that same feeling, because I always felt less than. And I'll tell you why. My real name, and if you tell anybody about this, I'll have to kill you. My real name is George Albert Miller III. You got it? So my two older half-brothers expanded on that word. I was a little piece of gas. I was a little piece of feces. Okay? And so I hated that. And I felt insignificant. I felt insignificant. And I always wanted to be tall thin and have Italian hair. Rule 62 applies. Anyway, I sought that same feeling every time I picked up. Sometimes I got it, sometimes I didn't. In the beginning, I did. One place alcohol took me, and I was in the Navy. I did 32 years in the United States Navy. One of the places that alcohol took me was to the clubs, to the bars, to places I had no business going. Okay. And the first beer always got me chasing skirts. Even though I was married, the booze took me there. Were I not drinking, I would not have gone to those places. Okay. It almost wrecked my marriage, but it didn't. Because my wife, somehow she had faith. It'll be 2 weeks next Tuesday, but 2 weeks ago this afternoon, we had a funeral service for my wife of 65 years. She hung on. And she's a saint. She was a saint. She put up with my crap for a lot of years until I put the plug in the jug. Alcohol took me places. I got in trouble immediately in the Navy. I got a summary court-martial. I joined the Navy in the end of October 1955. In March of 1956, I got a summary court-martial for pulling drunk stuff. Okay, I got me and two of my buddies went out on Cinderella Liberty on payday to have dinner and get some booze to bring into the barracks to have a party over the weekend. And somebody ratted us out. We got court-martialed. Okay. It cost me money for a lot of years. It cost me promotions. I was behind where I should have been. It taught me a lesson. Be careful. Hide your drinking. Don't be stupid. There's only so much you can do once you pick up. All that stuff goes away. So I continued doing the stuff that I did and tried not to get caught. Later on, in 1964, I had another run-in with the authorities in the Navy because we were stationed in Maine, and it was an isolated place, and we did a lot of drinking, and because our wives were 4 hours away, we took advantage of the situation and did stupid stuff. Okay. And one of the guys went home and told his wife what we were doing. And she called Senator Margaret Chase Smith and instigated a congressional inquiry into that. So four of us were given captain's mask. And was suspended. We were busted. We were reduced in rank. But it was only for a week. But it was still in our record. That was 1965. In 66, I went to Vietnam. President Johnson called up 5,000 Marines, and being a hospital corpsman, I served with the Marines 17 years. 17 out of 32 years I served with the Marines, hence the haircut. I had the opportunity to get those papers out of my service record. Because I'm still drinking, I'm still a drunk, and I don't want my promotions to be screwed up anymore. So I managed to get them out. Went to Vietnam and did some more stupid stuff, drinking. Didn't do any drugs, because I was really afraid of drugs, but I spent nights in the outside the wire and snuck back in when the patrol was going back in. The patrol was 13 men, okay? and I would tag along. I'd be the 14th man and get back through the wire. Never got caught. Okay? I could have been killed, but I was in Vietnam. Yeah. It wasn't a big deal. You can't fix stupid, and AA is the only solution to fix drunks, as far as I'm concerned. My last drink was on Saturday, the 17th of May, 1974. It was a promotion party, and at one of the celebrants' houses. And one of my drinking buddies was there, and he was having a good time, and he was drinking Pepsi Cola. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm drinking screwdrivers, and I'm not getting there. It ain't happening. And I doubled up. As a good drunk do, if it ain't working, you double up. or double down, whatever it is today. Anyway, by the end of the afternoon, early evening, I had managed to do a dance on the top of a Volkswagen Bug. Okay? And that was the fun part. That was the easy part. Shortly after that, I made a pass at the hostess in front of her husband and in front of my bride. And Lillian said to me, "That's enough, take me home." My answer was, "I will take you home so I can go out and have some more fun." I did not black out my last drunk. If I had, I probably wouldn't be here, or not yet anyway, but I didn't black out. So we got home, we had 5 children. Lillian was a great woman. She was also in the Navy. We met in the Navy, and we had 5 children in 6 years. And then we got a TV. Anyway, my middle son, who lives over in Virginia Beach, and is probably the reason that I'm in this area. He was 14, and he was sitting in my chair when I came in, and he was having a snack in my chair. And I said to him, "Are you too good to be sitting in that chair? Are you good enough to be sitting in that chair?" And he stood right up. "Yes, sir, I am good enough to sit in this chair." Lillian was afraid that I was going to hit him, although I had never been a violent or fighting drunk. She had her hand on the phone and was ready to call the cops on me. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it for several years. I didn't do anything. He got up, and I sat down, and I passed out. 5 o'clock the next morning, I'm in the recliner. I'm soaking wet. I'm covered with my own vomit. And I thought to myself, why am I not in the big bed? I had a moment of clarity, because I'm a drunk. Okay, I believe today that God heard that as a prayer for help, because I said to myself, I will never drink again. And I believe God heard that as a prayer, because I haven't picked up since. Didn't get to AA right away. My dad had stopped drinking for 20 years until my mother died, and my magnificent magnifying mind told me that I was a better man than my dad. If he could not drink for 20 years, I could not drink for the rest of my life on my own. Pretty smart, pretty smart. I didn't know about AA, but I put the plug in the jug. There was still beer in the refrigerator, and my wife, after several days, she says, "Aren't you going to drink any of that?" I said, "No, I don't drink anymore." "Okay." And you know, I had said the Alcoholics National Anthem many, many times. I'll never do this again. And she'd heard that many, many times. Promises. I won't do it again, honey. But she knew what Reagan said before he ever said it. Trust but verify. Fortunately, a fellow that worked for me, I was a senior chief at the time, and he was a first class, and we were teaching young corpsmen how to serve with Marines, teaching them about combat skills and how to stay alive and how to take care of Marines. Okay. We were standing out on the back porch of the schoolhouse one day, and he said to me, "Buck, you don't drink, do you?" And I said, "No, I don't drink." All puffed up. Okay. He said, "Do you go to meetings?" I said, "I go to training meetings, I go to staff meetings, I go to scout meetings." He said, no, "Do you go to AA?" "I don't drink." Puffed up, "I don't drink." He said, "Well, maybe you ought to try it. How long are you not going to drink for?" I said, "The rest of my life." He said, "That's pretty hard." He says, why don't you come to an AA meeting with me?" "I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that." Well, he wouldn't give up on me. He wouldn't let up on me. He said, "We got this meeting Friday night in Swansboro, North Carolina. It's a birthday meeting. It's a speaker meeting." That was it. "And why don't you come on out and bring Lillian and bring my oldest child, our oldest daughter." She was 16. 17. We went. He hooked me. He hooked me into going to AA. And when I got to the room, we get out there to the room. Now we're talking Jacksonville, North Carolina, Swansboro, North Carolina, rednecks. We don't have any rednecks in here, do we? Anyway, they had the window curtains on the wall. My mind was clear. I read them and I understood. And it scared the heck out of me. I understood what the steps were saying. This inventory, this doing, making amends and doing this stuff. I don't think so. I don't think I need that to keep dry. Anyway, I had a good time. I thoroughly enjoyed the camaraderie, the friendship, the food. The only exception was, and I have a very vivid memory of the birthday celebrant who had 12 years of sobriety. Long hair, long beard, bib overalls, and red underwear. He had a red union suit on. But his story, I connected with his story. I could identify with what he had been through, what he did. I don't think so. It's nice, but it's not for me. Well, Roy kept after me. He told me, his home group was a Monday night Northwoods Methodist Church meeting in Jacksonville, North Carolina. He said, "You come to the meeting with me Monday night, and you'll see somebody there that you'll know it's okay to be an AA." Really? Okay, because he hounded me. Attraction, not promotion? Well, anyway. I went. And his job was to set the meeting up. He had that duty for the month. And so I helped him. I was in service work the second meeting I went to. Not by choice. Before the meeting got started, the city manager walked in, and I said, "Yeah, it'll be okay." City manager of Jacksonville, North Carolina. I can hang out with him. My ego, At the end of the meeting, I've got Roy's hand in one on my left hand, and in my right hand I'm holding on to a guy named Three-Fingered Bill. He had three fingers and a thumb. Okay. Nice man. I was happy to know him. What I did not know at that time, and had I known at that time, I probably would not have stayed. He was out on parole for murder. But he was sober. He was working a program of recovery. He was in service work. He was a wonderful gentleman. When I found out about it, it didn't matter because I was caught. AA had trapped me. AA had made me feel better. And I even had started a little work. Not much, but a little work. Okay. But Three-Fingered Bill was a good man. The city manager was a pretty good guy, too. But Roy, who introduced me to AA, was my sponsor. He'd been sober 2 years, more than I was dry. He got sober in the Navy on Okinawa, Japan in 1972. He didn't do much with the steps. He didn't lead me through the steps. He told me, buy a big book, buy a 12 and 12, and read them, which I did on a 24-hour bus trip to Meridian, Mississippi, to pick up a car that my son had wrecked. Not the son here, but another one. So I read it on the bus trip. I read the 12 and 12, and I read the big book on that bus trip. And I got back home, and where did I put them? I put them up on a shelf. Okay. I didn't know it was a text. I thought it was kind of an adventure story. Okay. But I read it. Then I got transferred up here to Little Creek, Naval Amphibious Base Little Creek, at Boone Clinic. I was a senior enlisted advisor there. And we were living in our travel trailer on Baxter Street in the beach, which is now a whole bunch of apartments there, but in the trailer park. Okay. We were sleeping, our bed, Lillian and my bed, was on the table. The dining table, we put the cushions on it, and that was our bed. About the third or fourth night we were there, I had a drunk dream. It wasn't so much about drinking, it was about living. The dream was, I was at the Chief's Club. Lillian and I were at the Chief's Club at Little Creek. We were having a nice dinner. And one of my old girlfriends came up and she sat on my lap and says, who's the chick you with, Buck? And I woke up. Oh my God. I got to get to a meeting. I got to find some help. I got to get a sponsor. I can't do this by myself. I was so afraid that dream was real that it scared me into Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God. I found a sponsor. The second meeting I went to, there at the old donation church on Witch Duck in Virginia Beach, right off Independence. And he said to me, what step are you working? I gave him the United States Navy Reserve salute. I don't know. He said, have you ever done the steps? I said, what steps are you talking about? He says, the steps in the big book, in here, the steps in here. No. He says, have you ever been to a step meeting? I said, no. He says, we're going to start going to step meetings, and I'm going to lead you through the steps. Al Croft took me through the steps. First, second, and third step, easy peasy, because I could believe. Got to the fourth step, and I didn't know about that. I did not know about that. And he said, keep it simple. He had been the director of the dry dock at Little Creek before he retired. Okay, he knew about AA. He had a good solid AA program. He took me through the steps. Got to the fourth step, and I said, I can't do this. He says, you're not going to do it alone. We're going to do it together. You're going to do some writing, and then we're going to deal with it. Okay. So he gave me a book from Hazelden, how to do the fourth step, and I followed it. Not out of here. That was the only one that I've done not out of here. And I thought that I am writing the great American novel. And what I had learned in the Navy was you do a rough draft when you're writing something. Then you do a smooth, rough draft. Then you do a rough, smooth draft. And then you do a smooth, smooth draft. And then you're ready to publish. So I gave him my rough, rough draft. And he said, no. This is how we're going to do it. And he took me into the book, okay, with the columns. And do it the right way. Okay. But I started up with that other book, which was very simple, but it's not how Al wanted me to learn about me, to learn about Buck. So we did. And he had a place out on the Lynnhaven River, overlooking the river in a gazebo, and we spent two Saturday afternoons doing my fourth step and my fifth step. And then he said, well, now, that's the hard part. Now it gets a little bit more difficult because you got to do 6, 7, 8, 9. I said, what's 9? Because the step meetings that we had gone to, we hadn't got to 9 yet. He says, oh, that's the amends step. I said, what are amends? He said, that's where you repair the damage that you did to others and yourself. Are you kidding me? No. And he helped me with that. He explained to me what it is that I needed to do. My amends needed to fit the crime. My punishment had to do with my behavior, my actions. I had to repair the damage. I said, I don't know who I damaged. He said, well, you damaged a lot of people look based on this. Okay. He said, but it's not going to be difficult. You're just going to have to make a list. You're going to have to look at what you found in your step, fourth step, and you're going to have to make amends according to how you treated those people. Okay. I did. And I do one every year. There are 12 steps. There are 12 months. Every month I work a step. Okay. I do the first, second, and third, and seventh and tenth step every day. But on a month, I spend a month working on preparing myself and getting into the step again every year. The way it works out, I do my fourth step in April, my fifth step in May, and I start another year of recovery. And I keep on working through the steps. The steps allow me to do anything that I need to do with God's help. Okay. Me and God have a conversation morning, noon, and night. One of the guys that I went to meetings with in Pensacola, Florida, for many years, shared at a meeting one night at our Friday night meeting, Into Action Group in Pensacola, Florida. Okay. He would share, the last thing I ask God when I say in my nighttime prayers as I go to sleep is help me to remember to make you my first thought upon awakening. I do, it works. So when I awake in the morning, my first thought is about God. I go into a morning prayer, and then I start my day. And I ran across a reading the other day that talked about doing that on awakening. It said, the step doesn't say that you do it after you've been to the bathroom. You do it as soon as you wake up. You connect with God. so that everything you do afterward, going to the bathroom, brushing your teeth, combing your hair, whatever, you've already connected with your higher power. I said, that's why Lee said that. He knew that all along, but it was in a reading that I read earlier this week. And, you know, it hit me home again. If I don't connect with God before my feet hit the floor, okay, something might interfere with that. And looking back, it has often. I forget to do it until maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. Oh, I could have had a V8, but I didn't connect with God. Okay. So I do that, and it makes all the difference in the world. Okay. I'm sober today because Alcoholics Anonymous, God got me to Alcoholics Anonymous so Alcoholics Anonymous could get me back to God where I was supposed to be all along. I tell people, newcomers, you don't have to drink even if you want to. You don't have to drink even if your butt falls off. If your butt falls off, sit on your head and call your sponsor. You know? Because that's what's going to keep you from taking a drink. But if you don't call your sponsor, if you don't call somebody in AA when you're thinking about a drink, you're going to drink. If you call your sponsor before that, you pick up that drink, you got a chance. Okay? We all have a chance. We all have hope. Okay? That first meeting that I went to where the redneck was telling his story and I was identifying, okay, he gave me hope. I mean, he did not dress up, you know, but he was real. Okay? I dress up and hope that I'm real. Because this is what I live by. Okay. This is how God helped me to change my life to be a better person. Here my hand. Okay, I got a couple minutes. I've been to AA all over the world. Some of them are different. All of them are good. I have never been to a bad AA meeting. I've always heard something in an AA meeting that helps me down either today or down the road, or maybe it gave me an idea of how I could have acted differently yesterday or the week before, and I wouldn't have had to make amends. I still have amends to make. I have not been able to see everybody that I hurt, some because they're dead, some because I don't know where they are. But I am willing, should I encounter them, to make amends. That's my job, to be willing to make amends. And then carry it out. Okay? I know the people on my list that I have to make amends to, what I need to do, because I have the list. And I've checked off those that I've made, that I have made amends to, and those that I haven't made amends to, right beside their name, is the reparations that I need to make to them, given the opportunity. And I never know when God's going to put that in front of me to do that. I am willing to make amends. I am willing to do the next right thing in Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. I've had a lot of good teachers. My last duty station in the Navy was Newport, Rhode Island. It's where Lillian and I were married, okay, in September of 1956, okay. I had a sponsor there before I got there. He had been the CEO, he was a retired Navy captain, he'd been the CEO of the Alcohol Rehab Center, Navy Alcohol Rehab Center here in Norfolk when he retired. We sponsored each other for 15 years. I moved to Pensacola. I got another sponsor. And we sponsored each other for 15 more years. Okay? And then he moved up to Alabama, and I had to find another sponsor. Darn. But you know, when you go to meetings, and you're active in meetings, and you listen to people, you're going to find somebody, should you need a sponsor or just somebody to talk to, that person will be there when you need them, okay? I had a sponsor before I got here, from Pensacola, because I knew Ernie from the Navy. And I asked him when I found out I was coming, will you be my sponsor? He said, sure, where are you going to be? So I told him, I'm going to be in Harmony at Harborview, over here in Suffolk. Okay, this is the living facility. He says, oh, good. He says, my sponsor lives there. Well, a God thing. The next God thing was my apartment was on top of his apartment.
Oh, wow.
I think some of you may know Leo. Yeah, he's my grand sponsor. We go to meetings together every Wednesday. We go to our home group together. Okay. Always, God will put somebody in my life before I need them. All I have to do is pay attention to what's going on around me. Pay attention to what's ahead. Everything I've ever been through in my life and sobriety has prepared me for the next thing or something that's coming down the road. Some of the folks in the community where Leo and I live knew Lillian, knew my wife. She was in memory care there. And I was with her every day. I was with her the night that she passed. And they asked me, how can you do that? You were a great husband. How can you be okay with her passing? I said, she's with God, and God's with me, so we're still together. Okay. I've got her face on my phone. I can see her anytime I want to. She's been interred out at Albert Horton Cemetery. And I go out there once a week to visit with her. Okay. And I know where she is. I also know that God sends me signs. I walk around the building every morning, try to get 10,000 steps every day, and I walk around the building 6 or 7 times every morning. And one morning there was a bird up on top of the roof, looking down, squawk, 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 looking at me. And I looked up and I said, I see you there, Lillian. Thank you, God, for showing me that she's still got her eye on me. Now, Lillian was a black belt Aladon, which means God's in trouble. She's helping him straighten out the saints. And she's laughing at me now telling that, and that's okay. We had a love affair that lasted 65 and a half years. Actually, over 66 years. We met on the 24th of January, 1956. At 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 1300. On the 27th of April, 1956, Friday afternoon, I asked her to marry me in the chow line. And she accepted. On the 17th of September, 1956, we were married. And the rest is history. Our eldest daughter is in recovery. My youngest son has the ism but doesn't drink. A couple of my other kids have experimented with drugs, but they don't have the ism. Okay? And we are blessed. I am here today because God isn't done with me yet. And I'm okay with that. In closing, I'd like to read a portion from the big book. It's on page 275 and 276. Keys to the Kingdom. Okay. AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It's a way of life, and the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. We cannot outgrow this plan. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestment. Others may idle in a retrogressive groove without too much danger. But retrogression can spell death for us. However, this isn't as rough as it sounds. As we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we are compensated for a consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. A complete change takes place in our approach to life. Where we used to run from responsibility, we find ourselves accepting it with gratitude that we can successfully shoulder it. Instead of wanting to escape some perplexing problem, we experience the thrill of challenge in the opportunity it affords for application of AA techniques. And we find ourselves tackling it with surprising vigor. In the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. The same with my 48, rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people I am truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness. With that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it, that ache is gone and need never return. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys to the kingdom. I'm here today with love in my heart, and I am not sad. I am not lonely. I miss my wife. I have her in my heart, and I have you in my family. Thanks for letting me share.